This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 216 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender, who is absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Aren't you? Good to hear.
Yeah, you know. I've got to tell you, I think I've got about 12 million calories of Easter eggs in me, so I've got a little bit of sugar rush.
God.
I'm not going to be quite as relaxed and calm as I normally am on most episodes. I may be a little hyper, Bruce. Watch out.
Oh, dear. That's scary. Glyn,
rush. I must warn you, I may suffer a power failure down here during the presentation, talk.
Why is that?
Well, I'm charging my 18 million candle power torch. And it may take down the city of Melbourne. We've got to just be careful. Yeah.
And what are you doing with an 18 million candle power torch?
Well, lighting stuff up, of course. this thing is seriously cool. It takes three people to hold it, but it's awesome. I'm getting stuff ready for this weekend's weekend photo shoot on the old film set.
Oh, okay.
My 18 million candle power torch is coming with me.
Right.
And last time we did this, we were on top of a hillside looking down on this little shack at night about, I don't know, a kilometre away. And I was light painting it. So it's got some power.
Lumens.
So if I start to green, it's just sucking the power out of the room.
Yeah, right. That is awesome.
Between my sugar high and that sucking the energy down, I should be about normal.
So does this 18 million candle power torch have a focusing ring that will allow you to spread or narrow the beam?
No, it's just one laser-like point.
Right.
Not quite. It's pretty tight. But it's fixed. It's a fixed thing.
So
I'm just picking it up there to have a look at it. No, there's no focuser.
So let's say at 100 metres, how big's the spot?
Ooh, yeah, probably twice half its width. Well, I've never measured it, have I? You know, the thing is, it only runs for 0.39 seconds because it's the 18 million candle power. You charge it for a week. You put it on for just a... You know, there's no time to measure.
So it's actually a flash. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, by flash light, they mean it's a flash of light. And it's so powerful, it torches things. Literally, right. It sets things on fire.
Awesome.
It's a serious piece of kit, I've got to tell you.
So is this something you picked up at Bunnings?
No, I picked it up from Costco.
Okay.
It cost me a whole $50.
Right.
Nothing's worth anything anymore, Bruce.
No, and
but fully rechargeable batteries, it's good everything. It's a beast.
Wow. You know?
And I think you can actually cook on it too. You know, if you turn it on, it's hot enough to cook food.
Yeah, right.
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
Now, while we're discussing Rambling. Bunnings. you were telling me just before we started recording about these cases that are similar to a Pelican case.
That, we should tell people what a Bunnings is.
Now, of course, yes. Now, this was only relevant to the Australian listeners, although,
you know.
I'm sure the Americans have got something very similar to Bunnings. It's like a hardware warehouse. But
it's really big.
Really big, yep.
Really big.
So a Pelican case, as we all know, hard plastic shell generally lined with foam that you either cut out or mould in some shape or fashion around things that need to be protected from harsh vibrations and jolts. And it just so happens that Bunnings have got these great little knockoff version of a Pelican case on sale at the moment.
Ridiculously cheap.
Yeah. So what were the sizes of them, Glyn?
Well, there's one was medium. The other was larger.
Right.
I don't know from that sizes. Hang on a second.
Narrows it down.
Let
a
me
bit.
Pull one over. Hang on a second. It's what do I measure it against? Oh, no. Okay. Let's see if I put that there. So about, well, this one's probably about 14 or 15 inches.
Okay.
Yeah, just looking at comparison.
And is that medium size or the large one?
This is the small to medium, like I should. Right. Case. But they're under $40.
Australian.
Australian. Wow. It's about 300 US.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, hear that? See that? Oh, hurt my knuckle. It's not someone knocking to come in. That's how solid that bad boy is. It's
awesome.
Three knuckles. It's fantastic.
Now, you said the foam that's in it is already pre-cut?
Yeah, so it's pretty, all you got to do is going to shove your finger down the inside and wiggle it about a bit until the little block comes loose.
Oh, so they're all like little blocks, like Lego blocks?
Yeah, they're like little Lego blocks, but
awesome.
Not.
So you can make any shape you want?
Any shape you want, as long as it's square, rectangle, L shape.
Right, okay.
Z shape.
Anything, any shape with straight
sides.
Doesn't
do quarters well. Right. Just imagine any photo taken from the first generation of digital cameras. Think of the corners and those. That's what
it does. Excellent.
But this little $39 jobby, I've just loaded up with 8 pocket wizards, 5 flash guns, some Honnold grids, some gels, some cables, and it's waterproof, it's airtight, it's awesome. It's
wow.
If it had more in stock when I was there, I'd reckon I would have bought 2 or 3 more.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Price, it's awesomely good value.
That's great. And the bigger one was, what'd you say, about $60?
$69, yeah, and it was double. Well, it's probably 20 inches, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, right. Wow. Oh,
it's a big case. Yeah.
Australian listeners, if you're looking for some decent hardware to carry your gear around in, it sounds like it might be worth checking out.
You know, even if you're just storing it, even if it's not what you carry with you, it's just where you put your stuff when it's at home. It's kind of
Yep.
I don't like keeping my stuff in my camera bag when I'm at home. I like taking it out of my bag. And, just put on various shelves around the house. Well, the theory is I'll take it out and line it all up in these little neatly lined up shelves with all the gear. And then whenever I was going to a shoot, I'd think through what I needed. It helped me think and prepare. And I'd pull down the pieces and reload the bag.
Right.
And the concept, therefore, was I'd think through the shoot. I'd start preparing mentally. I'd blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And leave 3 things behind. Usually the case, but so this is kind of a good way of steam just to store the gear. I'm pretty happy with it. So
be pretty good for all those photographers up in Mackay who are always getting flooded out because getting to your
the
gear.
The big one you could probably float a small family out on. Nice. If you need it to, take the gear out, but
you can become your very own boat people.
Absolutely. even I didn't want to touch that one. That's saying something, Bruce. but I think go check it out if you're in want to. I love going through alternate suppliers for gear, I've got to say. I have an aerial camera set up on a painter's pole where I do aerial shots, which is pretty cool. Also from a hardware store. There's all sorts of stuff you can tinker with.
These CB aerials or TV aerials, mate?
No, this is a... It's
walked into that, didn't you?
Breaker. 10-4, good buddy, yes. Anyway, go check out your local hardware store.
Cool.
A good site, if you want to get into all that sort of do-it-yourself photography stuff, is doityourselfphotography.com.
DIYphotography.net.
If you want to tinker and just have some fun, and we can't always be out shooting.
Yep.
And,
They have some great projects on there of how to build softboxes and things like that. Yeah.
And I always think those things are great for the photo industry because, if most of the handymen are like me, you'll try and build it yourself. You'll fall apart the next day. You'll say, this is stupid, and go and buy one because you saw how good it held together long enough to see how good it could be.
Yeah.
And then it fell apart. that's how I started out with grids for my flash guns. Tried to make them out of black straws and cardboard. And it promptly fell apart. And I glued my hands together and it did an emergency hospital and all the normal stuff. Yeah. And that sort of opened the door to, this obviously works really good. I'll buy the damn things because I'm useless.
Fair enough.
But I blame the schooling system though, Bruce.
Oh, okay. Why is that?
Well, we did woodwork and craft and stuff in school.
Yep.
In high school, and I'll tell you, the 2 hours I went over the journey of my time in high school, you should have picked up some stuff.
And you didn't.
Nothing. Can you believe it?
That is.
Didn't even make a pencil case.
Unbelievable.
Didn't even make a pencil case. Shocking stuff. So anyway, what are we going to talk about today?
Well,
25 minutes in.
Yeah, exactly. I just happened across a mention of a new product just yesterday, and it really captured my eye as both a photographer and as an audio engineer. There is a company called Tascam, who are quite well known in the professional audio industry. They make lots of high-end pro audio gear. Yeah, for the broadcast industry, for that sort of stuff. It's not usually a name you're going to hear in the domestic hi-fi arena or anything like that. They have just come out with a product called the DR60D.
And sexy name.
It is. Very.
Yeah. I'll be back.
Yeah. Now, what this thing, the official product line is a linear PCM recorder and mixer for DSLR. Essentially, what this? Yeah, I know. But bear with me.
They need to get the marketing guy from ShamWow.
Yeah,
ShamWow, Mike now.
So what this thing is a small, you know, rectangular box type thing with
sounds great.
Sounds awesome. I know, and it's designed so that it has your standard thread. Like you have on your tripod or on the base of your camera, on both the top and the bottom of the unit, so it can be mounted in between your tripod head and the base of your camera body. It's got XLR inputs, which is the professional standard for connecting microphones. Most people are familiar with the tiny little, you know, 3.5 mil jacks that you have for a headphone, and you know, sometimes you'll see microphones that use that connector or that connector.
Is that the Irish connector there? I see there's an Irish one called Mick all the time.
That's right. Mick the connector, yes. So 3.5 mil is not professional standard. The next size up is a 6.5 mil, which is like the large style headphone jack. Again,
oh yeah, like your normal .70 style one.
Yep. Again, that is what's called an unbalanced connector. An XLR.
I need one of those.
An XLR connector, on the other hand, which is the type that uses three pins inside the connector, is what's called a balanced connector, and that is what the professional audio industry uses. And if you start looking around at serious microphones to slap onto your video capable DSLR, all the professional grade microphones are going to have XLR connectors, which means you're going to then need some sort of audio capture device which can take an XLR input. This sucker has two of them. The beauty of that is that you might have one microphone mounted on top of your camera or on, you know, whatever type of rig that you've got your camera mounted in.
Yeah.
You could then have a second microphone in a wireless situation. Now, most of us are familiar with the concept of pocket wizards or flash wave triggers, which allow you to get your flash gun off your camera and to transmit back and forth via a wireless connection. There are microphone transmitter receiver packs that do exactly the same thing. So if you're shooting, say, a wedding, you could have one microphone mounted on top of your camera, which is great for picking up, you know, all the ambience of whether it be in the church or whether it be, you know, out in the grounds as you're doing all the family shots after the ceremony or whatever it is. And your second microphone with battery pack and transmitter could be attached to the, you know, the groom's suit, you know, because he's going to be wearing black most of the time, so it'll be pretty much invisible. And that way you can be shooting from the back of the church, and on your second channel, you're getting a nice, close, upfront microphone sound from his lapel mic, because it is brilliant. And I won't go too heavy into the audio tech of this thing because...
Oh, well, that's what that was. Linear PC something.
So this thing has four inputs, so that you got your two mic inputs plus another two inputs as well.
Country and Western?
Yeah, that's right. We got both
sides.
even more exciting for me as an audio geek is the audio that this will capture. It will capture up to a 96K sample rate, which is way more than you would ever need. Unless, of course, you're planning on burning Blu-ray at the end of your production process, in which case...
Which is going to happen at some stage.
Yeah, exactly. It will store in 16-bit or 24-bit audio, which is also uber fantastic.
That's a lot of bits.
It comes down to when you're recording in 16-bit, you absolutely need to get your levels absolutely spot on and to record as loud as possible but without clipping your input signal. With 24-bit audio, you have the luxury of recording much lower but not losing any quality because you've got those extra bits to play with. Again, massively technical information you probably don't want to know, but the fact that this thing does it is really exciting. And there's, there's a whole bunch of other features on this device which I've just had a quick look at it yesterday and today and just gone, this thing, you know, as far as I can tell, looks to be a bit of a game changer. It's a great looking product. So I'm going to try and get hold of the people at Tascam in Australia, see if we can get hold of a review unit. This was only announced last week. So it's a brand new product.
So it's almost discontinued.
Great looking product. Really excited, and it's got, you know, every control you could possibly want on the outside of the box, so looks to be a really good piece of kit.
So something's actually been well thought out for once.
Yeah, it really looks like the audio boffins at Tascam have sat down with professional photographers and said, okay, what is it you need to do, and they've put everything you could possibly want onto this box. And the idea of, you know, having these connectors, you know, for it to mount on the tripod and to the base of the camera, all that sort of stuff, it just makes perfect sense.
Sounds great.
I've seen other blog posts where people have talked about using the portable handheld type of flash recorder, like I have. Using those, which is okay, but again, they only use a 3.5mm input to those flash recorders, and because they don't come with any proper mounting point, you've got to kind of jerry-rig some way of attaching them to your camera or to your tripod, you know, just a couple of loops of gaffer tape around the leg of the tripod to hold the thing, you know, so it doesn't look as good as something like this Tascam DR60D, which, you know, it just has been built to attach to your tripod and your camera and just be part of the ephemera of, you know, photography. It looks really
fantastic.
Good.
Fantastic. But I don't have an awful lot of interest in video. Probably interest in the right word, ability in the way of video. But even I sound excited at that. Even that sounds good to me. So it sounds like something you'd want to use, which is...
Yeah. Look, I think if you were in the wedding... you know, field where, you know, as a professional photographer, more and more of your clients as we go forward are going to start asking you, if they haven't already, about whether or not you can handle video as well. And, you know, it's pretty much a given that any DSLR body you go and buy, you know, after today is going to be video capable, unless you're still at the bottom end of the market. You know, so... As we move forward, you know, most of us would probably be looking to change a camera body within a 3 to 5 year time frame. So, you know, somewhere within the next 3 years, pretty much all of us are going to have a DSLR body which will shoot video.
Yeah.
And once you've got that capability, you're going to want to explore it. Your clients are going to want to explore it. And if you're going to offer your services as videographer as well as photographer, then you need to have the audio capture side down as much as the, you know, the video side. It's all well and good and, you know, saying, oh, I've got all this great glass with, you know, 1.8 apertures and all that sort of stuff. But unless you can handle the audio as well.
That's the biggest problem, I'm told, is decent audio.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, there are, you know, a lot of photographers who have embraced the video side of it. And, you know, I don't want to sound elitist, but, you know... it's quite easy to go from photo to video in the sense of it's all pictures and it's understanding light and the way light works with and all that sort of stuff. But audio is a completely different field again. Yeah.
Look, I've got to tell you, that's where I fall down. You know, the video, that's easy enough to do. Mm-hmm. You know? As you say, it's not no great challenge there. It's bringing it all together, and then it's also the amount of post work involved.
Oh, video editing is massively
I mean, I've got AD, BSO. I can't sit there and do video editing, you know. It's just never going to happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the actual shooting side is not a major problem.
Yeah.
It's the rest, and the audio is a huge part of that. I would say one thing to any photographers out there who are being approached to do the video side, charge for the bloody thing.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Don't just think charge enough that you can get a second shooter to come along to do other stuff when you're busy. You know, make sure you've got multiple angles. Yeah,
definitely.
Charge and make it look good.
I would almost go so far as to say you should be charging more for the video component alone than you are charging for the photography alone.
I agree, yeah. For all the reasons we just talked about.
If you're charging, let's say you're charging $2,000. Let's pick the middle of the market. Let's say you're doing a wedding for $2,000. I honestly don't believe you should. If you're going to include the video, you should be charging at least $3,000 for the video. So it should be a $5,000 package minimum. If you are going to offer both services, because let me tell you, if you think the post processing of your photos is time consuming, baby, you ain't seen nothing yet.
And before you even start, you got to go and buy a new computer.
Well, depending on what your computer,
depends what you got now. It's almost guaranteed it's going to be no good.
Yeah.
Almost guaranteed. So exactly. And let's not forget about the 200 hours you've just added to your post processing work.
Plus, you're going to have to invest in some decent video editing software.
Yeah.
Plus, you're going to have to invest in some training to learn how to drive that software.
Yeah.
So you need to be recouping those costs.
And what's the sort of price of this Tascam unit?
That is a really good question. I've got the
I had to get one eventually
in front of me. buy now from B&H. Let's see what B&H are charging in the US. Wait for it to load. Waiting. $349 American.
So
that'd be about $20 out here.
Yeah. you've got to recoup recoup that cost as well. So you're gonna $400 or $500 investment probably or whatever.
Plus you're gonna have to buy at least one decent broadcast quality microphone. You will get into the bottom end of that market around about the $250 mark. You will spend anything up to, $1,000 on a single microphone. If you want to have a wireless microphone kit, I absolutely wholeheartedly recommend the Sennheiser AW series. That is a tiny little clip-on lapel mic with a small sort of cigarette box sized transmitter battery pack that just goes on your belt or in your pants pocket, and it then has a receiver which is also the same size, and that receiver then hooks in again via a 3.5 mm input or I think you can get a Canon version as well into whatever you're recording your audio to. And those Sennheiser kits, I think they're about $600 per pair. So that's your transmitter, receiver, and the microphone. So it's not a cheap, path to go down.
No, you're throwing down, including software, $1,500.
Yep, easily. Yeah. Easily.
Yeah. So, definitely charge and charge a lot.
Yeah, if people are looking for video editing software, I personally love Sony Vegas Pro. The great thing about Sony Vegas is, as an audio editor, I found it very simple to work out its audio functionality, and the video side of things gave me...
There's no such word as functionality.
Why is that?
Because it's a made-up bloody word. What's wrong with the word functions? It has functions. It doesn't have functionality. Okay. Just because adding ality at the end of words doesn't make them real. Shakespeare tried it. Never worked.
Okay. I'll take you...
It's one of my things, yeah. I remember the very first time I heard the word functionality. It was a Kodak launching some new digital camera when the digital cameras were first coming out. And the marketing PR woman used the word functionality about 18 times in the first 3 minutes.
Right.
And from that day onwards, the word just is like searing spikes, pain, you know, head.
You're the first person who has ever challenged me on the legitimacy of that word. I was under the impression that it was a real word.
Functionality.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm completely lost. Where was I? What was I talking about?
I don't know, boss. Ever since that searing spike of pain through my brain after hearing that word. Yeah.
What was I talking about?
I don't know. Rewind.
Oh, software. Software. There you go. Sony Vegas. Hey. It has lots of functions.
Does it export, or can you only keep it inside that piece of software?
Oh, no. It will export to just about every known video format on the planet. Okay.
So what happens in Vegas doesn't stay in Vegas. It can go anywhere you want.
Very nice. Boom, Tish. He's here till Thursday. That was good. I'll pay that. It has all the tools that you could possibly want, like levels and curves and histograms and all the things that make sense to us as photographers. All of those tools are built into Vegas Pro.
Can you do that Top Gear look?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. If you can do Top Gear, it must be good.
Yeah, definitely. You can do green screen stuff. So if you do shoot something against a green background or a blue background, I mean, we use the term green screen as a generic term these days, but basically if you shoot anything with a constant color background, you can then punch that color out so that you can superimpose whatever it was that you shot over a background of something else. So yeah. You know,
is that why my green screen has got a blue screen on the other side?
Yes,
there you go.
Yes, you understand why it's green.
Yeah,
don't
I know
you?
Yeah, I know.
Cool. Yeah, so there you go, crash course in video for DSLR.
Yeah, boring is all batshit, but other than that, you know, it's unless you're kind of into that sort of stuff, then, respected listener, I hope you enjoyed that segment. I'm sure it was fine. How's your week been other than that?
Mine?
So that sounds good. We should try and get some of those and put them through their paces. That would be good.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I've got a whole bunch of videos I want to record, preview videos, product videos, that sort of stuff, so... I could do a test from the user point of view. You could criticize the crap out of my bad sound and give them a good review.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you need help with the video editing, give me a holler, because I do a fair bit of mucking around in Vegas, so...
Awesome.
Yeah.
Careful what you ask for, but awesome.
I did get an email from Richard Annable this week.
Oh, well. So what else happened? What did our man Richard want to say?
Richard was just making a comment regarding something we said either in 215 or 214 regarding the number of images fired off at a wedding. He said, an average wedding for me with 2.5 photographers, my assistant carries a camera, normally results...
Half one's always a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, they do get great low perspective shots. Yeah.
Normally results in a minimum of 2,000 to go through. Mind you, for each quote photo unquote, I'll take 3 shots in rapid succession to avoid blinks and conversations. It also gives me an option to get the best expression, which is much like what you were saying.
Exactly. And I do the same set for movement and my own movement, so it all counts for that.
Also, unlike most who seem to be smarter than me, I'm there from go to woe. And for those from those minimum 2,000 photos, a couple will normally receive around 40% of them. So he's giving them...
So like 1,200?
About, no, 40%. So about, about 800 of them.
Straight through to the keeper. That's 800's quite a lot.
Okay, I obviously missed that.
I was just being a smart ass by saying 1,200 and you took it serious,
Sorry.
Come on, dude, it is April the 2nd, But in some parts of the world, it might still be April 1st.
Okay.
And was there any speaking point of, to his email other than just to tell us how many photos he took?
No, just want to get his name on the podcast again, I think.
Animal. Richard. No, but it's a good point. I mean, everyone's different, of course, from there. Yeah. You rapid fire 4,000. But I mean, that's, I've got to say, over 2.5 shooters, that's not an obscene amount.
No, it's not. No.
Considering I know Richard puts in 14 hour days.
Yeah.
Or more. So, I mean, that's still being reasonably concise with his shooting.
Yeah.
which is good. Yeah.
Now, while we're mentioning April Fool's Day,
yes,
you compiled a list of some,
well,
some
not
great
a list,
stuff yourself.
But I did come across two things that I thought were worthy of a bit of mention.
Okay.
And one was that Canon announced the new 7DL.
Oh, yes, that was great.
The left-handed 7D.
Yes, that was very good.
I thought that was, and you got to see the photo of it because it is just so bizarre to look at.
It is.
It is just bizarre. So, if you're out there, folks, listen to if there's anyone out there, hello, 7DL. Google it. It's definitely worth a bit of a look. And yeah. That was one good sort of imaging related April Fool's joke that I came across, which I thought was pretty good. But the other one I really liked was was Google put out one.
Oh, what did they do?
They did. Yeah. Well, what's missing? What else, where can they go next? I mean, they've already got video. They've got images. They've got word search. They've got Google Books. They've got Google Read. They've cornered all the market except for smell. So they come out with Google Nose. And basically what it is, you type in what you want to smell and it works this whole little bit of magic where it manipulates molecules around the outside of the computer to generate the smell. Yeah, but the video was done in classic, modern. I'm in a modern office talking about my fantastic airwear product that's coming out, and done so well that it's almost plausible, except for the stupidity of what they're talking about. it was excellent. It was very well done. So, part of the lines were like, "God, who knows what the inside of an elephant smells like?" Well, Google knows, and I.
Nice.
Very, very cleverly done. So if you can, if Google up Google Nose and see what you come up with there as well. They were excellent little. If someone else saw some good April 1st things, put them out there for us. Even if they're retrospective, it's still good to see and have a bit of a laugh.
Yep, absolutely. Now, while we're on the subject of Google, you were talking about wearable cameras like Google Glass. What's the big hoo-ha?
Well, there's the whole new generation of privacy laws that may need to be built because of this wearable technology that everyone... So the thing is, I think the problem with... where the issues start to come up with things like Google Glasses and all the other variations are these things shoot automatically at random intervals or at prescribed intervals with no interaction by the user.
Right.
So therefore, normally if you pick up a camera to take a photo, you're making a conscious effort to take that shot.
Yep.
But now all of a sudden these things are recording everything, sort of continuously. And so there's always up in arms about, banning them, going to children's creches, as an example, pick up your kid. You can't take cameras normally. Well, why should you be able to take a wearable camera in? Restaurants, nightclubs, any sort of school, any sort of public area where, people may feel they're entitled to a little bit of privacy. So but what's interesting, though, is for the first time, it appears that, especially in the US, they're trying to put in laws about wearing a product that's not even available yet.
Yeah, right.
They're already starting to think of the long-term implications of wearable cameras and how it's going to change the world. And one way I've started to see this start to happen was this big asteroid, so this big meteor fall in Russia recently. Did you see all the video footage of it?
Absolutely. It was amazing
These are from cameras that are continuously recording on the dashboards of people's cars.
Yep.
These are accident cameras or whatever they want to call them.
Yeah.
Perving on your neighbours hoping something happens for Russia's funniest home videos or something. But it's very interesting that already the world has been captured in a way we've never had it done before, from angles and perspectives that were just not there's from everywhere. It's fascinating to see how the world's going to change when this product's going. These things are coming out as of next month. It's not like they're a long way away. These wearable cameras are launching next month.
I foresee that there will be a technology. If not released with the first generation, it won't be long afterwards, where there will be some kind of, like RFID, a control mechanism that will disable the camera from, you know, acting within a certain environment. You know, yeah. So you know how you have these RFID stickers that you can stick on a doorway so that when you walk through it, it reads your phone and, you know, you can have them in your house. So, you know, whenever you come home, the RFID chip reads your phone and just automatically turns the Wi-Fi on your phone.
Exactly.
I can see that there will be something like that that will come out very soon after the wearable camera, which will become like a, you know, a lead shield that prevents the camera from working within certain environments.
I like the way you're thinking.
And then there'll be a whole hacker movement which will emerge of hackers who will work out a way to circumvent this, you know, lead-lined RFID slash blocking mechanism.
And, of course, they'll have come out with the hack 3 days before the first one's installed.
Exactly. Anyway. It'll be out before the actual product is there to block. Yeah. or get incredible. Around.
That's, you know, but is that the way the world's going to head, though, Bruce? Yeah, we're going to have all this sort of blocking devices. Are we going to have shields around our houses?
Yeah, probably. You know what? I know this is going to sound very niche because there's probably not many people have read the book. There's a great science fiction author from Canada by the name of Robert J. Sawyer.
Hey?
That's right. Robert J. Sawyer, eh?
Hey.
Robert Sawyer wrote, amongst other things, there was a TV show that didn't last long called Flash Forward. Do you remember that?
No.
No? Okay, doesn't matter.
I'm too young.
It only aired about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, it only lasted for one season. But he wrote a series of three books, which he called The Neanderthal Parallax. And the first one was called what?
Did the movie have Paulie Shore in it? Because I think
there hasn't been a movie of it yet. I don't know if there ever will be. But it was a very interesting idea. The basic plot of the book was that there were parallel universes here on Earth, and that in our universe, Homo sapiens became the dominant life form on the planet, and we evolved to where we are today. In the alternate universe, the Neanderthals remained the dominant life form, and they proceeded right along the timeline in parallel.
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, kind of. But what was really interesting was that a wormhole opened up between these two parallel universes.
Those things are popping up everywhere.
Yeah, they are. But what happened was that the people from our timeline ended up going over to the Neanderthals' parallel universe. And in that universe, they had developed an environment where every person or every Neanderthal had a camera basically attached to their person, which recorded every single thing they did in their life. And as a result, there was no crime because everything
you
was...
You couldn't get away from it.
Yeah, you couldn't escape it. So everyone lived harmoniously. It was a really amazingly well-written story.
I saw the episode on Quantum Leap that one time.
Probably something similar to it, yeah, you know.
I'm sure there's a Canadian in that.
But
it might have been an episode of MacGyver.
But another thing that was in this book was the whole concept of people not owning cars and the idea of these automated vehicles, which didn't require a person to actually drive them. They were just robot-controlled. And whenever you needed a car, you just called for one and arrived at your door. You took it to wherever it was you needed to go, and then it drove itself back to the pool, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we're seeing that sort of technology starting to emerge as well. And I keep on thinking about how, you know, they say great science fiction authors are the people who really dictate the way our culture evolves. You know, the whole beam me up, Scotty thing, you know, is, you know, the risk communicators, you know. I mean, we're there with mobile phones already.
So,
haven't quite got teleporting happening.
Well, yeah, we were promised jetpacks too.
Where's my damn hoverboard?
Damn! the world is so cruel. We're promised so much and given so little. The space 1999, my bottom. So what's going to happen is that if we get wearable, if I can succinct this, what you're saying is if we get wearable cameras, a wormhole will open up and we'll all fall into the world of Neanderthals.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Wow. I'm holding you to that, Bruce.
Of course you are.
A 6 month comes out, I want to get one and see if it happens. I'm not sure what Skype's like from the other side, but we'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, listen, what's the story with your mosaic photo book?
You know, I missed it by that much is the story.
Really?
You know, I popped out for like 20 minutes today.
No. Oh, you're kidding.
And come home and there's the little UPS. We just missed you.
Are you serious? It's here already.
I only ordered it last Tuesday. And there was some little festival in between Easter. That's right. Easter in between, which you thought would have slowed things up a wee.
Okay, so hang on. So you ordered it on Tuesday, which would have admittedly been Monday in the US, but that only gave them Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
But you know what? It arrived today.
Which is Tuesday,
which is Monday in the US still. So it's the same.
Okay, but yeah.
If you're pedantic.
Yeah, but the mailman didn't come from America today.
All I'm saying is they got some serious functionality.
That is pretty awesome. So they got your photos, turned it into a hard product, and shipped it around the globe inside a week.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it's kind of cool, isn't it? Yeah. And actually, I'm gutted. I don't have it to be able to see it and talk to you about it tonight. But we'll do a follow up next week and
definitely
eventually home enough in time to pick it up.
Yeah.
But I'm hanging to see it. It's a whole new thing, so it'll be kind of cool.
That's pretty awesome.
It is.
You know,
it is
just the time.
The modern world, dude. It's just amazing. Speaking of modern worlds, there's a total non-segue into the next thing I want to talk about.
Right.
And something I haven't even told you about.
Oh, okay.
Because I just found it a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
You're rabbiting on something about audio and video, so I went off and Googled some stuff.
Right.
Just now we're bored. Yeah, ADD, dude.
Right.
But I came across this Russian man and him, a couple of his mates, who a couple of days ago, by the looks of it, climbed the Great Pyramid of Giza at night.
Oh, wow.
And wait and shot a whole series of photos from up there that are incredible.
Okay.
Yeah, photos. Yeah, it's something we just don't see this viewpoint at all.
Were they like sunrise shots?
There's the nighttime photos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a long time exposure nighttime shots from the top of the Great Pyramid, and it's
okay. Incredible. So was he looking over the lights of Cairo?
All around, over Cairo, over his mates sitting on top of it. There's like one shot with four of them or three of them just sitting on different steps of the top of the pyramid. it's incredible. They're called Raskalov, Raskalov.
Okay.
So we'll have it in the notes.
Yeah.
I've been to their Russian site and there's these photos of them on top of all sorts of weird and wonderful places around the world.
Yeah, right.
Viewpoints of the world that you just never see. So it's fascinating stuff.
Cool.
For someone like me who has a incredibly bad fear of heights, this is about as close I'll ever get to seeing some of these things. So it's kind of cool to look at. But they've got some great perspectives, really do.
Yeah, right. So I wonder if their photos are on Facebook.
I don't know. I haven't looked. Yeah. Hmm.
I have to search for them. Raskalov.
Raskalov.
Awesome.
So his name's Vitaly, Vitaly Raskalov.
Okay.
It's Russian than that, does it?
No.
It's fascinating stuff. Just awesome to see. So I think one of the great things about photography is we get to see the world in different ways that we probably would never normally see it. And here's some more great examples.
Yeah.
I spent Good Friday with a whole bunch of fantastic heathens.
Oh, did you?
I actually ran a workshop on Good Friday, which is...
That's right. How did it go?
you know, it was awesome. We had I welcomed them with a bit of a pagan chant to make them feel at home. And, you know, figuring, yeah, you know, I made sure there was no fish to be seen right. in the lunch. Yeah, make sure it was all meat. Obviously, you know, they wouldn't be falling for that fish thing on Fridays.
No,
we had a great day. We just, but I tell you, it was an understanding your camera workshop.
Yep,
and we had some great faces,
Okay,
so I got one shot I really love. You know, made the guy look a bit like a coal miner in the photo.
Oh, okay.
But it's just a really strong portrait. So yeah, not only did I, yeah, get to earn some money to help pay for family's lifestyle, but yeah, I got a couple of great shots out of it too. And we had the quiz master from Sailor of the Century, a big Australian quiz show back in the 90s.
Pete Smith.
And 90s. No, the actual guy who wrote all the questions.
Oh, right.
Yeah, one of the smartest men in the world came along. So he was great. He was he had a good face to shoot.
Wow.
And as a learning how to use the camera, he had a good face to shoot. I don't think he works well in a group scenario so much. But no, he was a lovely guy, and yeah. So I had a ball. I've got to say, it's not something I would normally have thought of. You have running an event on Good Friday. It happened by accident,
right.
But you know, we had a lot of fun. That's what's all. That's what photography should be.
Now, another thing that you were talking about before we started was this idea that somebody's popped up on Facebook with a way for you to grab photos that your friends have posted and send those photos elsewhere so that you can use them to make coffee
photo
mugs.
Books, coffee mugs, T-shirts. Yeah, I'm thinking possibly, aprons, haven't looked yet. Yeah, oh, phone covers, I've just popped on the site. And what has it got? Laptop covers.
Sounds like another privacy wormhole waiting to happen.
I guess it comes back to this whole thing about, you know, when you put a photo up on Facebook, who's seeing it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is really seeing it? How do you actually know where it's actually going? And if random people can download photos of your kids or whatever and make their own stuff to use at home out of it, it's that's kind of creepy. But what if you're taking some awesome travel shots or something and they're downloading that and they're using them for, I certainly know a lot of stuff gets used for commercial gain by advertisers. But what about, people go out and making mugs out of your stuff? Or it's very bizarre. Yeah. So the company's called Photos at My Door, which is, can I say, is kind of weird. But it's a company name. I kind of don't get it. But I often see strange business names that always makes me wonder. Did you really think about that beforehand?
You know, just coming back to the whole privacy issue on Facebook, obviously you as a Facebook user can go into your settings and go, I only want to share my photos with people who are in my friends list and I don't want to share them with anybody else.
Yeah.
If your friends on Facebook see a photo that they like in, you know, something that you've posted, and by virtue of your privacy settings, they are able to see it, they can then click share. And if they have their privacy settings set to show it to everybody, does that then circumvent your request to only share with your friend list?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good question, isn't it? I don't know the answer.
Yeah. Just thinking that one out while you were talking
but
about
I also,
that whole
but
concept.
Also think if you're now we're talking about normal Facebook users, what about business pages like a wedding photographer's page? If you're posting photos on there, are people downloading and making their own mugs out of the wedding photos you put up there, for relatives and all that? Who knows, there's a whole all these sneak peeks people like to put up with photos. Are they disappearing and going to be marketed out by somebody else?
Well, even along those lines, but I guess as insidious, I noticed on Sue Bryce's wall last week, she was calling somebody out for having taken her photos, Sue Bryce's photos, and was using them as allegedly her photos, whoever this other person was. Which is a bit.
I've seen a lot of that lately. A lot of that.
Really?
Oh yeah, just two this week.
Wow.
Yeah, it's only Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It's it could be up for a big week. It seems to be a lot of the case. People just starting up the businesses, photographers, and using anybody's photos they like.
Wow.
And passing it off as their own.
Man, that's how do you expect to get away with that? Like, unless you are capable of taking an image of equal quality, it's going to come back and bite you on the
bum. And if you could, you wouldn't use that.
Exactly, exactly.
So not that certainly. But I saw, but here's one that came out was the whole blurb of the business. I do not use Photoshop. I believe in natural capture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Stolen photos from all over the internet, and every single photo that she demonstrated was Photoshopped up at the wazoo.
Yeah, right.
So if she says I don't, well, I assume she doesn't use Photoshop. She doesn't know how to. I see it all the time. I don't use flash guns. I don't. I'm a natural light shooter. Well, I don't use flash? I don't know how to use it.
Yeah,
you see that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're that anti Photoshop, it's probably because you don't really
understand it.
And because I mean, you can't be anti something that can be subtle or over the top. That's your artistic choice.
Yeah.
You can't. Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with Photoshop if you want to crop, sharpen, resize, remove a pimple. Yeah, that's Photoshopping. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, changing people's head sizes and other body parts or whatever. Yeah, you can go extreme, of course, but you can't be anti something. But if you say that you don't Photoshop, but the photos are obviously that you're selling as your own business are obviously incredibly Photoshopped, how on earth do you get that across to a client?
Yeah,
these photos look nothing like those.
Yeah. Oh man, that's just bizarre.
So there's a lot of that going on around these days. So
yeah, right.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it. It brings back that whole privacy issue with Facebook, and yeah, we understand there's a benefit to putting photos out to these sites, but what's the downside of it all? And not even talking about the murky side of the world that uses those sites. But
so does it mean we have to watermark everything?
Oh, they're taking the watermarks off. That's easy enough to do.
Well, depends where you place the watermark.
Yeah, you've got to put the watermark in such an obscenely massive size and horrible location that it ruins the photo enough. There's no point putting it up anyway.
Yeah.
Realistic. The only place for a watermark is bold, shadowed, massive, right across their faces. So you can't actually see the face. Realistically, you put it anywhere else, anyone with a reasonable cloning skills can pip that out in no time.
I don't know. I guess there's always the idea of reducing the opacity of the watermark. So you put it over, right over the face, but you have it reduced opacity so that you can still see the face, but it makes it very hard to clone it out.
I reckon there's enough easy images out there for people to get.
Yeah.
If you can make it moderately hard, they'll
that's
find
probably
these
enough.
Somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, without necessarily having, because I mean, let's face it, that's going to ruin your photo. I mean, especially if you're trying to sell that image, it's pretty hard to sell emotion when you've got your name smacked right through someone's head. It's look at your gentle, lovely baby with my name tattooed on its forehead. Yeah. Emblazoned. It's kind of hard to get that emotional sell across when you've that impediment. But if you make it moderately hard, like I said, there's a lot of easy stuff out there, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Interesting. That's kind of been my week, I guess. I don't have an awful lot of other wonderfully dramatic stuff to talk about.
The only other thing I had on the list was you were going to tell me about the Vietnam photography thing in the big picture. Boston Globe.
Kind of lost interest in it because ADD and all.
Okay.
I'll go back. I'll be good. there is in the Boston Globe, in today's Boston Globe, there is an article about, and it's in their segment called The Big Picture. There's a segment about a Vietnam War photographer who's gone back to Vietnam to retrace his steps and reshoot.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, and but he wasn't
sort of a landscape then and now thing.
Yeah, but more about the people, the places. Yeah, so it's got some emotive interest there, which I think some people may be interested in having a bit of a look at if that sort of work appeals to you.
Yeah, right.
So that's just another thing I came across this week. And I've got to say, I've been we're going to throw another hi-ho out to Malcolm Backender again.
Oh, yeah.
He's off in Vietnam at the moment. I've been enjoying looking at his photos, even though most of the stuff he's only been posting up, phone images.
Yep.
Nothing wrong with that. I love phone images, but it's been nice to sit and do a bit of armchair travelling this week watching his shots.
So. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got married while he was over there.
Did he?
He did.
Did he? Did he know the person?
Yeah.
You know, or was one would know. Was it one of those things of convenience? Oh, that looks like a good idea. You know, I've been tempted in Vegas a few times myself.
Drive-through wedding.
Oh, why not? Yeah, you get two Elvises for the price of one or something. It's pretty good.
So, yeah, congratulations, Marvel.
Well done, Mal.
All right, mate, good to talk to you again.
And you.
And I shall catch up with you next week.
Take care, mate. Look after yourself. Bye, everybody.
See you, mate.
See ya.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.